to Jacob's arrival in Haran, or Paddan Aram, where he has met Rachel and he has impressed her and Uncle Laban as he moved that massive rock that was blocking the water from watering the sheep that Rachel had brought into the watering area. He has also met Uncle Laban, who is convinced that Jacob is his relation, and he has invited him to stay with him in his house for a month. But there are a couple of problems that are not yet realized by Jacob. He has traveled this incredibly long journey, somewhere near 1,000 miles, and in his excitement and in his enthusiasm, he's got some problems that he has failed to recognize. The first is, upon his arrival in Haran looking for a wife, he has not prayed at all. He has not sought the Lord's guidance in what he should do, where he should go, what process he should follow, nothing at all. Even after this amazing theophany that he had, where he saw the angels ascending and descending on the ladder into and out of heaven, where he saw God over top of the ladder, where he heard the covenant promises repeated by God with his very own ears. Here he is at this very critical juncture in his life, living as a prayerless man. He's entering into this foreign territory, engaging in these new relationships, completely on his own, relying solely on his own wisdom. It doesn't matter how mature we are spiritually, anytime we are walking prayerlessly, anytime we are relying on our own wisdom alone, it is a problem. And for Jacob, this is a very significant problem. Secondly, his father Isaac has sent him away empty-handed. He has nothing in terms of a dowry to present to Uncle Laban in exchange for his bride. Even though his intended bride, Rachel, is a cousin, a dowry is still an expected practice, and Jacob has absolutely nothing to offer in exchange for Rachel. Thirdly, this arrangement is going to leave Jacob at the mercy of Uncle Laban, who is greedy and even more cunning and manipulative than Jacob is, as we're going to see. And as I mentioned last time, we often read narratives like this, assuming that this is exactly the way God intended, and perhaps it is, but we can't know that for sure. We will never really know how different this story could have turned out if Jacob were a praying man, if he had sought the Lord and what he should do prior to engaging in these relationships. Would God have warned Jacob about Laban's trickery? Would God have given Jacob specific instructions that would have circumvented Laban's plans and prevented Jacob's 20-year service to Laban? We will never know the answers to those questions, but we can know for certain that Jacob's prayerlessness most certainly had an impact on the events that are about to unfold, because prayerlessness will always have an impact on our lives, the decisions that we make, the direction that we go. And if you don't believe that, that's a problem. So again, Jacob has arrived. He's met Uncle Laban. And verse 14 from last time tells us that Jacob stayed for 1 month. We pick this up in verse 15. We're going to read all the way down to verse 30, and then I'll have my comments on that. Verse 15, then Laban said to Jacob, because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be? Now Laban had two daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter Rachel. Laban said, it is better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go into her. Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. Now in the evening, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went into her. Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I have served with you? Why then have you deceived me?" But Laban said, "Is it not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn? Complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also for the service which you shall serve with me for another 7 years." Jacob did so and completed her week and gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. Laban also gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maid. So Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and he served with Laban for another 7 years. Now there's a lot in these 15, 16 verses that we're going to look at. So in the ongoing outline, Jacob gets married, right? But he gets married twice. That's not what this looks like it's supposed to be, but that's in fact what it is. These 16 verses cover 14 years, and they are divided into two sections. Verses 15 through 20 cover the first 7 years, and then verses 21 through 30 cover the second 7 years. So number one in the outline, Jacob loves Rachel. That is the overarching view of everything that transpires here over this 14-year period. Remember, Jacob has been staying with Laban for a month, and that is the backdrop to this introduction that we're now looking at in the dialogue that begins here. So letter A is the setup, verse 15. Laban said to Jacob, "Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?" So on the surface, Laban's question sounds concerning and somewhat friendly. "Because you are a relative of mine, should you work for nothing?" It's a rhetorical question, and the obvious answer is, well, no, I shouldn't work for nothing, right? I shouldn't just be here and work for you and get nothing out of it. It's a loaded question. But the words "serve me" and "wages," or in some translations, "work for me," communicate Laban's true intention. In fact, in this narrative, the words "work" and "serve" dominate the section. It is used 7 times, and it characterizes Jacob's entire life in Haran. Work or serve is the underarching characterization of Jacob's life in Haran. Rather than helping a relative get established and begin to build a home, Laban reduces this family relationship to that of a contract between an employee and an employer, and as we will see, he uses this leverage that he has to exploit this family member. So think about this. Your nephew comes to your house to marry your daughter, and rather than helping your soon-to-be son-in-law and your daughter get a leg up on life, you're going to exploit and take advantage of this newly found relationship and do everything you can to exploit and milk all you can get out of this new relationship. This is what Laban is going to do. In the month that Jacob has stayed with Laban, he has learned of Jacob's true intentions. He has seen how attached he has gotten to Rachel, and he is going to use this to his advantage. So Moses takes the opportunity now to provide some background to this month-long environment that is going on that isn't super obvious to the reader. Verse 16 and 17. Now Laban had 2 daughters. The name of the older was Leah, and the name of the younger was Rachel. And Leah's eyes were weak, but Rachel was beautiful of form and face. Laban has two daughters. The older is Leah. It is widely believed that the name Leah means cow. Now, that's not an indictment on Leah's looks. It doesn't mean that she was big and heavy like a cow or physically unattractive like a cow. Names are given at birth. Laban is a pastoralist. He raises animals. The younger is Rachel. Her name means ewe, like a ewe lamb. Again, he's a pastoralist. These names have more to do with Laban's character and how he viewed or treated his daughters than it did their appearance. Laban viewed these daughters as commodities. Rachel gives an insight into this in Genesis 31 that we're going to look at in the future, in 31:15. She gives a glimpse into her father's character when she says this in Genesis 31:15. Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us and has also entirely consumed our purchase price. So when he named his daughter Leah cow and his daughter Rachel ewe lamb, it had nothing to do with their looks. It had everything to do with Laban's character and viewing these girls as nothing more than commodities. Something that he could gain from, something that would one day bring him monetary value. And this gives you an indication as to why Laban is going to milk all he can out of the dowry for Rachel and what he's going to do to Jacob. Laban saw his daughters as little more than property by which he could profit. Now, it tells us that Leah's eyes are weak, which means they don't have the sparkle, the life, the energy that the Far Eastern culture would prize. But Rachel, on the other hand, was beautiful of form and face. She was very different from Leah. She was beautiful. Leah was not beautiful at this point in her life where Rachel was. So Rachel was more beautiful than Leah. Jacob was more fond of Rachel. And there was an instant attraction at the well. Laban could see this, and he knew this would put Jacob in a place of weakness. Letter C, we come to the price. Now remember, Laban has asked this rhetorical question, what should your wages be? Verse 18, now Jacob loved Rachel, so he said, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter Rachel. It's a magnanimous suggestion by Jacob. We have no idea what Jacob thought Laban might say in response to this. No, 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 my nephew, that's far too much. I would never ask you such a thing. Perhaps that's what Jacob thought. That's not what Laban said, right? The impulsive and hasty Jacob plows ahead without giving any thought to what God may want him to do in this moment, and he makes the suggestion and the commitment to work for Rachel for 7 years as a dowry. A 7-year work contract in the form of a dowry is far more costly than the typical dowry price would have been. And because Jacob loved Rachel, he was willing to go above and beyond the typical dowry price, but we have no way of knowing if this was just a magnanimous gesture on Jacob's part. But he throws it out, and Jacob says, I accept. That's the agreement that we read in verse 19. Laban says, it is better that I give her to you than to give her to another man. Stay with me. So Laban agrees to Jacob's term, and in doing so, he plays up the family relationship in a sense saying that he would prefer to give his daughter to a family member than to just give her to another man, and it gives the impression that he is doing Jacob a favor or that this is an act of goodwill to Jacob, because after all, Laban has the ability to say, no, I'm not going to give my daughter to you. I'm going to hold out and give my daughter to someone else. The father always has the ability to give or withhold the blessing in the giving of a daughter into a marriage relationship. So Jacob gets the impression that Laban is doing him a favor by granting him the blessing of giving his daughter to him. Now, several commentators note the play on words here in the Hebrew that are not obvious to us as we read this in the English. The acceptance of the 7-year contract for Rachel, Laban never says, I will give you my daughter Rachel. He only says her. Jacob says, I will work for your daughter Rachel. Laban only says, I will give you her. Now, whether that is Laban's play on words, whether he is hiding his true intent, or it's just an unspoken agreement, we don't really know. But the grammatical experts in Hebrew seem to think that this is a ploy on Laban's part to play a game here with Jacob in hopes that his older daughter Leah would be married some point in the 7-year contract. And if not, then he would give Leah to Jacob in some way and pull the wool over Jacob's eyes at some point in the future. That's what some commentators speculate as a play on words based upon the wording that is used here in the Hebrew language. So Jacob stays with Laban, works the 7 years as a dowry for Rachel's hand, and the footnote to this contract is found here in verse 20. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. So on the one hand, the days flew by because of Jacob's love for Rachel. It was a pleasure to work for her for these 7 years because of his love for her. Now, number two in the outline is Laban substitutes Leah. So on the one hand, the time flew by, but on the other hand, we're going to see that here in just a second. The days flew by, but we see here that Jacob is more than ready to be married. And this is expressed, letter A, in Jacob's frustration. Verse 21, Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my time is completed, that I may go into her. So there's a couple of things to note here. The verb give that is used here is a very, very strong word. Again, because we don't know Hebrew, we don't get that. But the word give that is used here, as it is used in other places in Genesis, is used with a note of desperation. One example of the way that it is used here is going to be seen next time that we look at Genesis. Leah is able to give birth, and she is birthing children, but Rachel, like Rebekah, is barren. In response to her barrenness, Rachel says in Genesis 30, verse 1, when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister, and she said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. Rachel has grown desperate because she can't bear children. And she says this to Jacob as if he has some control over it. So the verb give, in the way that Rachel uses it, is used in a form of desperation. It is the same way that Jacob uses the word give when he says to Laban, give me my wife. In the same way that Rachel is desperate to conceive, Jacob is now desperate to get his wife. It gives us the impression that Laban is a taskmaster. Jacob's work has now become oppressed. He's become oppressed in his work to Laban. Although on the one hand, the time has flown by because of Jacob's love for Rachel, Laban has likely become oppressive as he has ruled over Jacob, and commentators surmise that perhaps Laban has not given Rachel to Jacob at the end of the 7 years, and Jacob is now demanding his wife because the time has now been completed. So, on the one hand, the time is completed. He's ready for his wife. And on the other hand, Jacob loves Rachel so much that the time has flown by. So you will note that there is no recorded response from Laban here when Jacob makes the demand. Letter B in the outline, we see that there is a wedding feast. Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a feast. Again, in the Hebrew, we have no idea what this really means. A wedding ceremony in this culture is very, very different from what we experience in our culture today. It's this microphone, I apologize. Normally, a wedding involves processions to and from the bride's house. There is the reading of the marriage contract. There is a large meal that is attended by both families and all of the wedding guests. The first day's celebration ended with the groom wrapping his cloak around the bride, who was veiled throughout the entire ceremony. And then the groom would take his bride to the bridal chamber where the marriage would then be consummated. So what is not obvious to us is that in the text, the meaning of the word feast. So in a wedding feast, it means that there was a drinking party. It was kind of like the bachelor party after the processions and the marriage contract was read, and the meal. There was the bachelor party. All of the men gathered for the bachelor party, which likely resulted in a very drunken Jacob, who would then wrap his cloak around the veiled bride, who he would then take to the wedding chamber to consummate the wedding. Letter C, the switch, verse 23. Now in the evening, he, Laban, took his daughter Leah and brought her to him, and Jacob went into her. Now remember, the bride has been veiled through the entire ceremony. Jacob, after this drunken party, this drinking party, is now likely very drunk and has wrapped his coat around this veiled bride and has gone into the chamber to consummate the wedding. Laban has switched Rachel and Leah, and Jacob has absolutely no idea. There are many things to note here. What did Laban do with Rachel? Where's Rachel in all of this? We have no idea. She is likely away and restrained because she likely loves Jacob as much as Jacob loves her, but we don't know where Rachel is. Is Leah a willing participant in this switch? Probably so. Is she fearful that she's never going to get married as the older sister? Is Laban forcing Leah to go along with this switch? We don't know. What kind of animosity exists between Leah and Rachel because of the differences in appearance, the way Laban may be treating them, the way Jacob may be treating the two daughters? We don't have any idea. Whatever animosity may exist between Leah and Rachel is now going to be greatly exaggerated to the level that now exists between Jacob and Esau. So now these two sisters, Leah and Rachel, are going to hate each other the same way that Jacob and Esau hate each other. But most importantly, in the same way that Jacob took advantage of his father's blindness in order to deceive him, Laban took advantage in the cover of night to deceive Jacob. We'll talk about that more in just a minute. Letter D is the gift. Verse 24. Laban also gave his maid Zilpah to his daughter Leah as a maid. Now, this is out of order in the sequence of events because the maid would not be presented until after the identity of the bride was made. So the bride's identity has not been made yet, so the gifting of Zilpah, it's out of order. We don't know why it's revealed this way, but it just is in the narrative, which brings us down to letter E. Jacob has been Jacobed. That's the play on words in the Hebrew. Jacob has been deceived. And what it literally sounds like in the Hebrew is Jacob has been Jacob. Verse 25. So it came about in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this you have done to me? Was it not for Rachel that I served you? Why then have you deceived me? Jacob is outraged that Laban had the audacity to deceive him. But not only that, the woman that he is now married has also participated in the deception. The light of day has exposed the charade, and Jacob asks the question, what is this you have done? Why have you deceived me? It is clear that he did not hear the irony in the questions that he has asked when he deceived his own father by pretending to be Esau. Jacob did not recognize that Laban had done to him the exact same thing that he had done to his father. Jacob has worked 7 years for the wrong woman, and it is about to get worse. Laban's excuse, verse 26. But Laban said, is it not the practice in our place to marry off the younger before the firstborn? Laban uses the custom as the rationale for the switch. But obviously, this custom was never discussed when Jacob and Laban were discussing the agreement of the dowry for Rachel 7 years earlier. Laban has exposed himself as an unscrupulous man, hiding behind an unknown and an unspoken custom to defend his taking advantage of his own nephew for his own gain. Jacob has worked 7 years for his love, Rachel, and Laban has tricked him and given him the older daughter, Rachel, to honor a custom that was never spoken about, that Jacob knew nothing about, and Jacob has been deceived. Laban has gained from this, and again, the irony is completely lost on Jacob. Jacob took advantage of his own brother and deceived his father for his own personal gain, and that created no moral dilemma for Jacob at all. Jacob is just like Laban, but he doesn't recognize it. Letter G, Laban's offer. Verse 27, complete the week of this one, and we will give you the other also for the service which you shall serve with me for another 7 years. So in this custom, the celebration lasts 7 days. And only one day has been completed. So Laban says to Jacob, complete the 6 days of celebration for Leah, and then I will give you Rachel, and then you work for me another 7 years. If I will give you Rachel if you will work for me another 7 years. So at this point, what can Jacob do? If he wants to marry Rachel, he's going to have to work for Laban another 7 years. There is no response from Jacob recorded here. He has no choice. If he wants to marry Rachel, this is what he has to do. Number three in the outline, Jacob marries Rachel. Verse 28. Jacob did so and completed her week, and he gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. So he completes the week of celebration for Leah, and then he begins the week of celebration for Rachel. We are given no detail, no more information. He marries Rachel. He now has two wives, one of which he did not want. Letter A, we have the gift in verse 29. Laban also gave his maid Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maid. And so just as with Leah, Rachel was given a maid. By the way, these maids are both very valuable gifts that are given to these new brides. Laban didn't have to do that, but he did do that. Both of these maids are going to bear children to Jacob. And these children that are born to these maids will become a part of the 12 tribes of Israel. And we'll talk more about that next time. Letter B, the dysfunction continues. Verse 30, so Jacob went into Rachel also, and indeed he loved Rachel more than Leah, and served with Laban for another 7 years. So he did love Leah, but not as much as Rachel. So the difference in love between Rachel and Leah is duplicated, like the difference of love that existed between Jacob and Esau. And oh, by the way, when all of these children are born to Jacob, there will be a difference in the love between the 12 children on Jacob's part. So that dysfunction is going to continue. So think about this. 2 weeks earlier, Jacob was single. Now he has two wives, and he has two future concubines, and these four women will all become competing mothers over what will become 12 children to the father Jacob. It's going to become a colossal mess. And what is important to note is that God is working out the moral law of reciprocity in the life of Jacob. It is the law of sowing and reaping. Now, Jacob has not heard that law. He knows nothing about that law, but we know something about that law, don't we? We studied a lot about it in Galatians 6, 7, and 8. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. So Jacob has been a deceiver and a manipulator, going all the way back to the stealing of the birthright, but more recently to the stealing of the birthright blessing. And after that nearly 1,000-mile journey and 7 years working for his bride Rachel, for the first time, Jacob is on the other side of being deceived and manipulated by his own uncle. One commentator writes this, and I'm going to leave you with this. In Genesis 27, two brothers were exchanged by a trick before a blind man. In Genesis 29, two sisters are exchanged by a trick in the darkness of night and behind a veil, which eliminate Jacob's sight. It's the exact same thing. It's just different players. Jacob has reaped the deception that he sowed. Do you think the moral law of reciprocity is just alive and well in the life of Jacob? Oh, no, 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 because we know Paul wrote about it. Do you think it's just alive and well in the book of Galatians? No, it's not. Now, it's very possible that God intended for the moral law of reciprocity to be lived out in Jacob's life exactly this way. We can't say that for sure, but it did. And we don't know how God works out the law of reciprocity in our lives, sowing and reaping, but we know that he does. And we can be assured that when we live our lives prayerlessly, without seeking God's guidance, without seeking God's wisdom, by choosing to disregard the light of truth, we're going to make bad choices. We're going to sow to the flesh. And when we do that, we are going to reap to the flesh as well. And even though that is true, God our Father, through his promises, will never leave us. He will never forsake us. He will always love us. He will always cleanse us. And he will always continue to bless us. But we must learn from the law of reciprocity as it relates to sowing and reaping. Would you pray with me, please? Father, how grateful we are that you